If it pleases the court, I'm Todd Rogers with the firm of Lyle Rogers and Martell in Fort Collins. My registration number is 19259, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Stovall and Ms. Drew. This case concerns, importantly, an express easement. No other kind of easement, an express easement. The easement is for ingress and egress, and it's owned by Mr. Stovall and Ms. Drew. The easement language is, it's an easement for the non-exclusive right to ingress and egress over the existing road connecting with County Road 82E. The parties involved are neighboring property owners. In order for Mr. Stovall and Ms. Drew to use the easement, they have it for ingress and egress to their property. They have to leave the existing road for a short stretch of time or property. I think the record reflects 30 to 90 feet, depending on where they leave the road, to access their boundary. That is the crux of the issue and the problem for the trial court. That's the spur easement that the trial court is referring to. From our perspective, that spur is something the trial court needs to provide to the parties through the law to tell them the location of this easement. Otherwise, we own an easement. The effect of the trial court's ruling is that Mr. Stovall and Ms. Drew own an easement that they can't use. It totally defeats the purpose of the easement. So the court's finding is that, yes, there's an existing road that connects with County Road 82E. That's now known as Blacktail Road. There's an easement. You own it. You can't use it. And that is the reason that we're appealing. Now,
Mr. Rogers, I have two questions. One is, do you agree that the easement is for use of the road? And my second question is, does Mr. Stovall and Ms. Drew have access to Blacktail Road any other way than by crossing the Gleason property?
The first question is the use of the road. So, importantly, the road is a dead-end road. And so, under the court's existing ruling, they have the right to drive up and down the dead-end road, which the road is on the Gleason's property. They don't have the right to get off Blacktail Road to get to their property.
Well, I guess my second question, can they get to their property without crossing over the Gleason property? So if they were on Blacktail Road, can Stovall and Drew get back to their own property without crossing over the Gleason property?
If they're on Blacktail Road, yes. But the way that they get to Blacktail Road is by County Road 82E. So, you know, it's imagine a cul-de-sac. So if you're in the end of a cul-de-sac, can you get back to the road that got you there? Yes. If the question is, can they get to their property at any place along Blacktail Road without crossing the Gleason's property? No. The best visual exhibit, or not the best, but one of the best, is Exhibit F, which is this aerial photo of the property. And the boundary, if you look at this, it's probably in the book like this, should be oriented this way for north-south. So this is Blacktail Road, this is County Road 82E. The boundary is just almost parallel to Blacktail Road, and it varies 30 to 90 feet. So it appears to us that the court has misinterpreted the easement. And an easement for ingress and egress is just that. That means you get on and off your property from the easement described. And the effect of the court's ruling totally defeats that language and defeats the entire easement. I don't know why the court ruled as it did. But restatement especially provides, you know, great language about how to look at these easements that are sometimes in old deeds that aren't, you know, very explicitly described.
82E at one point dead ended too, though, right? Or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, it always was an ingress egress road, but in both directions.
Well, it was a historic. Yes, it was always a historic road that existed.
Right, because I'm wondering if the language didn't refer to the Blacktail Road, but referred to their ability to access County Road 82E through a piece of it that extended to their property. If County Road 82E ended at this sort of triangle intersection with Blacktail Road, then perhaps that portion of it talks about the piece that extends beyond Blacktail Road, which they would need to ingress and egress, because that seems to be the only way.
But I don't think that evidence, I don't think the record reflects that about County Road 82E. I don't, there's okay. Nothing in the record that would indicate that that's how 82E was aligned.
I guess I'm wondering, to the extent that we're talking about ingress and egress, and that's not really possible with the current Blacktail Road, does that just not render it ambiguous, in which case the court would look at extrinsic evidence?
Well, I think it's okay. First of all, I don't think it's ambiguous, and I don't think it does. I think you can use Blacktail Road for ingress and egress. And the court just has to say, here's where you can get off of Blacktail Road for this short period of time. Here's the location. It's kind of like a width issue.
How's the court going to determine that? I mean, how would the court determine what the parties intended as to getting off of Blacktail Road to go to the Stovall Drew property?
Well, the court would have a hearing and take evidence from the parties about how they intend to use the easement. So,
Go ahead.
So, consistent with like the Eisenberg case, where there was just a very general easement grant for a right-of-way across property. That's all it said. The Court of Appeals said, and that might even been a Supreme Court case, said that's fine. There's an easement grant. Vagueness in the description of the precise location of the easement doesn't defeat the whole easement. So if we have a easement grant for ingress and egress, we get to ingress and egress. And you can't say, well, you didn't say exactly where the driveway is going to be, so you don't have an easement at all, which is the effect of the trial court's ruling.
Mr. Rogers, when you use the terms ingress and egress, the easement grant says ingress and egress over the existing road. So does over the existing road tell you where the ingress and egress is?
Well, you're ingressing and remember, the existing road is on the Gleason's property. So anytime you are on that road from your property, you're ingressing and egressing to the public road, to County Road 82E.
So I guess I'm asking, the words ingress and egress, do they mean something other than driving up and down the road and getting in and out of the Gleason property by using that road? Just
yes.
The road. Okay.
Yes. And I think that's reflected in the restatement. And I think it's section 4.10 in comment D, that specifically refers to what ingress and egress means. And the trial court, in its ruling, discusses that a little bit and says it sounds like access. Ingress and egress generally means access. You've already got access over here, so you don't get ingress and egress over here. The important thing about that is, at the time, it's true that currently my clients built their house and access it from County Road 82E. That wasn't necessarily always the case. That was vacant ground at the time of the grant. It was vacant ground. It very possibly in the record, there's testimony that there could have been access what's now Blacktail Road.
Mr. Rogers, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let me ask. Was it 40 acres that your clients own?
Yes.
And how long this boundary line that runs parallel to Blacktail Road? How long is that? What's the distance of your client's property that runs along parallel to Blacktail Road?
That's about 1,000 feet. It's a little over 1,000 feet.
And
it should be reflected. I think it's an exhibit I and J.
How many spurs are they entitled to under this language to reach their property off of Blacktail Road under your argument?
Right. Basically, it's as many as the trial court tells them they're entitled to after hearing. We also believe that we're entitled to, for sure, at least one where the reservation of the 60-foot easement in the Gleason's deed for the old road overlaps onto our property. So that's the whole discussion about the old road.
It overlapped onto the Stovall's property?
For a period of 118 feet, as reflected in the court's order and in the record and in the exhibits.
I thought that was to the west of Stovall's property line.
So then in the 80s, the road was realigned slightly, and now the new road is entirely no portion of the 60-foot width intersects with our boundary. But that's a whole nother issue in answer to your question. It's as many as the trial court says, and where the trial court says.
Let me get this straight, because I did not understand this to begin with. The existing road before Blacktail Road was moved in the 80s went on to what is now the Stovall Drew property for 118 feet, is what you're saying?
The reserved 60-foot grant, the legal description for 60 feet of the easement, the actual road, physical road itself, I don't think did. So the exhibits in the record and the court's ruling reflects that here's the center line of the old road. It, for a period of 118 feet, that intersected, and if you go 30 feet from the center line, for that 118 feet, that intersects with the Stovall Drew property boundary.
So you're saying the actual roadway didn't cover the Stovall Drew property, but to the extent that the easement also had 60 feet around the road, that part of that encroached on the Stovall Drew before they totally moved the road?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Not the physical driven road. If I might reserve the balance of my time.
May it please the court, I'm Thomas Metcalf. My attorney registration number is 367, so I'm an old bugger. And it's amazing that I could even walk in here, but I'm going to take a stab at it. The testimony in this case, and I think where Mr. Rogers' argument, and the reason we requested Judge Williams to go up and view the premises, which he did, is the language says over the existing roads. There were no existing roads. Judge Williams, in his findings, says, I went up and observed the property, and there are no existing roads. What they're trying to do is the time, and the court has to understand that the time these original grants were made, this was all part of a 2,700 acre ranch. It was being chopped up into smaller parcels so that no parcel would be landlocked. And I think that the judge's decree reflects that, so that no parcels would be landlocked. There were mutual easements in all the grants, so there would be access to each of the parcels. There's an access to the Stovall property that goes within 100 feet of where they built their house, a main road. What they're trying to do is add a second and a third, which if you look at Mr. Stovall's testimony, he indicated, I asked him, how many easements do you think you should get? And he said, oh, at least two. There's no language in the grants that would allow that. And it seems to me that you can read all the case law, the Lazy Dog Ranch case law, and the cases cited by both of us, and it really becomes a matter of interpretation. Judge Williams heard the testimony. He heard from the surveyor, he heard from all those people, and his findings are well supported in the record. I believe the criteria for review is, are the findings of the judge supported in the record? And they are supported in the record, and it's so clear to me as an outsider that they're trying to acquire a new easement. That's as clear as I can put it. They're not wanting an easement over the existing road. They're wanting, and if you read the testimony of Mr. Stovall in cross-examination, he said, yeah, I'd like to have as many easements as you'll give me. But he acknowledged that they have access. They have reasonable access. They knew at the time they acquired the property that the Gleasons didn't think they had access across their property. That's well documented in the record. They inquired before they bought the property. They were told, no, you don't have access across our property. There were no visual roads across there. They then go in, build their house, have access via county road, and now want another access. And the reason, and it's in the record, so I'm not arguing anything out of the record, the reason that they would like to have access to the north portion of their property, they have wetlands. They built their house on the south side of the wetlands. There's the wetlands, and it's by wetlands, I mean, it's just a boggy meadow bottom. And then they put their well on the north side. So they would like to, rather than put a culvert or something in their own property, they would like to leave their property, come into the Gleason's property, make an access 60 to 90 feet, as Mr. Rogers said, off of that, on an undefined place, go through the fence to access to their north side of the property. They have access to their property. They're not landlocked. They have access over the existing roads, but what they want to do is make a new road. It's not use the existing roads.
Let me interrupt you just a minute, yes, sir, Mr. Metcalf. I'd like to ask you, you just said a few moments ago that you thought that the trial court's findings are supported in the record.
Yes, sir.
And the trial court found that the easement that is being discussed is along Blacktail Road.
Yes, sir.
However, it seems in your brief that you argue contrary.
My clients don't agree with the judge's findings. They agree with the final conclusion that they don't have access, but they don't believe that Blacktail Road was the road that was ever referenced. Their argument was, and Judge Williams found against them, their argument was that Blacktail Road is not the road because it wasn't even in existence there. Judge Williams found to the contrary.
That was my question.
Yes,
that issue was
yes, it was
litigated.
Yes, it was. Against us to some extent. The conclusion was in our favor, but that part was contrary. We thought, and I, to be very blunt with you, Your Honor, I wouldn't have put that in there, but my client wanted to reemphasize that it wasn't over Blacktail Road. So, but no, you're absolutely right. I don't take issue with your, and you've obviously well read and having reviewed the record much better than I would have thought that you might be. So, And I don't have anything additional. I would ask that you look at the record, review the findings of the judge, and remember that he went up, made a physical inspection, specifically found that there were no existing roads that they're now trying to establish, and review the language across the existing roads.
Let me ask you this. How do you respond to Mr. Rogers' argument that even if the exact location of an easement is not specified in the easement language, the court could, or it should be interpreted to allow the easement to meet its intended purpose?
I don't disagree with that.
But the
original, you got to go back to the original intent, was to have them have reasonable access. They have reasonable access. And the language in the decree was across existing roads. There are no existing roads, and what he wants to do is put in new roads.
Why would they refer to existing roads in the easement if there were none?
Well, there were some in the subdivision. That language applied to all the deeds in the subdivision. In fact, in the exhibits that Mr. Rogers put in the evidence, there was a chain of title of a whole bunch of properties, and they all had similar language. So the properties wouldn't be landlocked.
And that existing road, would that have been County Road 82E? Or some other road?
It would have been 82E.
Okay.
It goes right through the corner of, and within a very short distance of the Stovall's house.
If I understand your argument correctly, you're saying there were no existing roads going from Blacktail Road over to the Stovall, what became the Stovall's property.
There weren't then, and there still are.
But there was a Blacktail Road or Rabbit Creek Road or something like that?
My client doesn't think there was, but the judge found there was.
That there was a dispute as to whether there was even a north-south road or northwest road?
It existed at the time of the 1976 or 78 conveyance. Those were all record when my client bought in 1995, I believe, and his client bought two parcels. We have 80 acres, they have 35 acres. And my client lives up there, by the way. This is not a frivolous vacation home. He drives back and forth to Cheyenne from that property every day, and his wife comes to Fort Collins to work.
Well, I don't think there's any part of the record that substantiates this Stovall's property being a frivolous vacation home either.
No, I wasn't suggesting that. Okay. These are residential. Some of them are, actually, and some of them, it's kind of interesting, if you go up the Blacktail Road to where it dead ends, there's some homes in there that are not year-round homes.
So when you look at the language of the easement, you would say that right to ingress and egress connects with County Line Road, and not that the existing road connects with County Line
That's
Road.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I thank your indulgence for an old man driving down here and trying to convince you that the judge was right. I think if you look at the record, you'll find that he was right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Metcalf. And Mr. Rogers, you have 44 seconds left.
All right, I want to just address two things here quickly. First is Mr. Metcalf's statement that in the record are all the deeds in the subdivision about a whole bunch of properties. That's not in the record. What's in the record are the chains of titles for the two parties' properties, beginning with the original deed for 2,800 acres and then their respective chains of titles. All of this reference to mutual easements throughout the subdivision and all these other properties and deeds is not in the record. The second thing I want to say is the Supreme Court in Eisenberg has laid out the rules on what to do in this kind of situation with a minimally described easement, but which is clear as to its meaning. And that is, the court has a hearing and considers various things and then locates where the easement is. And that's how you resolve these problems.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Rogers, and thank you, Mr. Metcalf. Appreciate your excellent arguments. They will be very helpful to us in arriving at an opinion in this case. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.